1 o'clock hour. There's in some other world, you know, we would just read all these texts and that would be the show the rest of the day. But I don't think the boss would appreciate that.
And I think people of the are boss, forgetting when they're discussing this, and we can get this back. Mm-hmm. That I grew up in a house where there were 9 total children. Do you think that just like the house was always a choice? You had to explore outside of the building.
So that's why the park was the choice, huh?
Right? Several places were the choice, but not, you know, not always the house. Someone called me Tonka Trash on the text line.
That's not right.
We've got
that's
all right.
That's where we shot the greatest good video.
That is true. We've got Speck in studio. He was driving around listening, and you've got a story?
I do have a story. I think this is a good one.
All right.
Okay. All right. So it's junior year of high school. I had just asked this girl out to prom, and so we went out for a pizza date. It's Friday night in the Maryland suburbs, right?
Sure.
So I didn't have my driver's license at the time, but she did. Okay. So we're driving back to her house. We're in the pizza place parking lot.
Okay.
And she grabs me and we start making out in the car.
Okay. Sure.
She forgot to put the car in park. So as things are, you know, we're making out, whatever, she lets go of the brake. And hits a Chinese delivery driver.
Like a person or the car?
The car.
Oh, yeah. Thank God. The car. Okay. I thought you were in
no, not a person. Not a person.
I was like, oh, God.
So, you know, again, she was going 5 miles per hour. Yeah. No big deal. But she's a high school girl. She gets out of the car. He gets out of the car. They start, you know, exchanging what you're supposed to exchange. Yeah. She gets flustered and drives off. With me in the passenger seat.
So now you're a part of a hit and run.
Now
accident.
I am part of a hit and run accident. So she drives me back to her house, and like high school kids do, we went on the couch, started watching a movie, and
Netflix and chill, pre-Netflix.
Netflix and chill. It was probably DVD.
You got other things on your mind. You're like, sure hope that guy's fine. Yeah, you're done being worried about it.
I never really ate at that restaurant anyway, so I shouldn't run into that delivery driver ever again.
Yeah.
We're on the couch watching a movie. And again, things start progressing again. And all of a sudden, there's a knock at the door. Well, it was the Maryland State Police, because the Chinese delivery driver had written down her driver or license plate.
Uh-huh. Damn.
And obviously had called the police. They checked the plate number. They show up to her house. I have to have my friend call and come pick me up. And this is, again, you know, as a high school kid in middle of an act, like, not great timing.
Admittedly.
What happens is we go to prom, you know, later in May, whatever. I never tell my parents because I'm like, I'm not involved. Like, why get in trouble?
Does it have anything to do with me?
Yeah. We get back from vacation in August, and there's a voice message back in the day on our answering machine.
Yeah, this dates it a little.
It's from a lawyer asking me to be part of a deposition on behalf of the Chinese restaurant and her. I'd never told my parents. I'd gotten away with it for 4 months.
And now you had to be in a deposition?
And I had to be in a deposition.
Were you seeing this girl anymore?
No, because it was not a great prom date either. That's probably a separate story for a separate time.
Oh.
So I'm in the deposition room, like Michael Scott in The Office, in front of my mom and the lawyer describing what was happening in the car and on the couch.
That's pretty bad. Oh, God.
And then, because they could not settle out of court, I had to testify in open court with lawyer.
Why did they settle out of court?
Cross-reference.
Yeah, why did they actually go to trial?
I don't know. I had to look at a parking lot map. I had to diagram where we were, the whole nine.
Just, that's really bad.
Just for a little junior year high school action.
Just story.
How bad is that?
Just to get a little.
Did your dad ever say anything like to you
effort.
About this? And like, eventually, when your parents found out, what was their reaction?
They were pissed because you
were part of a hit and run.
Because I was part of a hit and run. Them, they had to be, you know, in the, you know, had to take me out of school for a day for deposition, for court, you know, the whole nine. So
that's a hell of a story.
It was not a great start to our prom and our love journey.
Settle out of court.
I don't know.
She was obviously guilty of the crime.
Like, so yeah, what was that? What was the verdict?
Like a mystery here.
I mean, I assume she. I honestly don't remember, but I assume she had to pay some sort of damages. But it would not. It did not settle out of court. So that was the one and only time to this point in my life where I've testified.
Have you seen her
in
since?
Open court.
No. Seen her since high school?
Nope.
Keep that car in park.
Yes. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do something,
make sure it's in
park.
Put
the car in park.
Your car's like, they won't just let the car, they'll put on the e-brake if you don't put it in park.
It was awful. That's my story.
Thank you. That's a hell of a story.
That's pretty bad.
That lived up to the hype. I didn't know if it would.
Having to describe.
Just imagine like the attorney, like
in front of your parents and then in open court.
Mr. Spector, can you describe what explain what was like, taking place? You were sitting in the passenger seat. Is that correct?
And her hands were where? And you're like, oh, come on, man. Just can we be cool about
this? And you were in the act of kissing at this moment. And then you started to see the car jerk forward. Is that correct? Yes.
Where were your hands at the time? Where were her hands at the time of this? And you're like, come on, man.
Was that over or under the shirt?
Could you describe, like, come on, man. Was that over the pants, under the pants? Could we, like, God, please don't make me do this in open court in front of my parents.
I was not expecting that kind of story. Spec came running in. He's like, I got a story for you guys. I was like, oh, let's hear it.
He texted me and I missed it, but I'm glad that he stayed around to
Were your parents the embarrassing type? My mom was the embarrassing type in front of girls. Like, would not filter herself or ask questions she shouldn't ask in front of.
That was more likely my dad to be that way than my mom. My mom was always,
My mom,
what do you mean, like the awkward questions? Is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Like my mom would discuss sex life in front of girlfriends at that time. And you're like, I don't need this. I don't need this conversation. I don't want to be anywhere near this conversation. That was your mom or not at all? She just asked the awkward questions, trying to make people more comfortable.
My mom's the awkward questions person for sure.
Do you have like an awkward first story, like when you're like with your now your wife, obviously, like with your mom interacting with Brie or
I don't know if there was no awkward. I guess in a way it was kind of just awkward in general. Like the first time they meet, it's like, hey, you know, it's not anything. She did get a little bit irritated, not irritated, but she was like, why did your mom ask me so many questions? And I was like, well. She's very protective.
Like personal questions?
Brie, how is this going? Or so you do this?
She's probably trying to make conversation.
She wants to make conversation. Where Brie at first was like, "There's a lot of questions to be asked. I don't know how I feel about this." But yeah, my mom is definitely the question.
Text line is still a wild place. Basically,
let's
anytime
shut
they
that
see
down for the rest
like
of the day.
That, the text
we
line,
introduced sex in the middle of the day, and that was it for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
There are at least 100 text messages, I would say, at least.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
About things people have seen at Chiefs games.
Let's talk about... Well, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Mm. Let's talk about... Well, that's a lot of alcohol sometimes to those places. Opens up a different world. Let's talk about the Chiefs for just a minute, since you mentioned Chiefs games. We all read the Hollywood Brown alarm clock tweet the same way. He is indicating that the clock has started and that he is close to returning for the Kansas City Chiefs. His practice window wasn't open today. So I guess it's really just two things. When do we think he comes back? And how much of an impact will he have when he comes back? I think those are actually directly related. If he doesn't come back before the postseason, I think his influence on this offense is minimal. You will not catch me talking about their divisional round game where Hollywood Brown is going to be the difference in the game if he just came back the week before or that's his first game back because they got the bye. I think he's got to come back week 16, 17, 18, those weeks in order to have an impact in the postseason.
So, yeah, definitely we all saw the tweet, and I think it means the practice window is going to open up here pretty soon. And I think week 15 is the earliest. Most likely we're talking week 16 or so that he maybe makes his return and they slowly ramp him up. Limited snap count. And yeah, if he's able to do that for a couple weeks before the postseason, then the likelihood of him having an impact in the postseason, of course, increases. But, you know, the expectation preseason cannot be the same expectation as it will be for, you know, 3 weeks of football or something that we're going to see out of him possibly in the regular season. But I do think... it provides another deep threat, even if it's limited snaps. Maybe, just maybe, he's somebody that could take some of the underneath Rashee Rice routes. That's typically not what he's always been, but I'll go back to Mahomes praising his route running ability over and over this offseason, whether it was at Camp Pat or it was at training camp and all of that. So I absolutely think he can have an impact for this team, but it requires him playing more than just one game before the postseason. And I think judging by the current timeline that we think there's a chance to hit, then he will have that opportunity. Now, Andy Reid was asked about it and just said, he's making great progress. I'm proud of him. Yada, yada. Did not say, hey, yeah, we think he's, you know,
we got 7 weeks till the end of the regular season, right?
Yeah. But 21-day practice window, let's say it opens up next week. Then that puts week 15, week 16 absolutely in play. This is week 12, right? Aren't we in week 12?
Week 12.
So, okay,
Chiefs
next week
played
is week
11. Or please, be team 10 games, but 11.
So,
yeah,
so it'll be
12.
Week 13 next week, and they have a short week. But week 13, if you open up the 21-day window, then week 16 is very much in play.
I think that should be the target goal. If you want Hollywood Brown to have an impact in the postseason, to maybe make a difference, right, between a win or a loss, because one more weapon, on the team can make a significant difference, then that's probably what you should be aiming for. Because I think it's really, really, really hard. If this was a player that had been in this roster before, I don't think it's as hard. But because of this, I think it's really, really hard to say a player who has played a singular snap in a preseason football game for you can just roll in and know what the hell he's doing. I don't care if he's a veteran or he's technically been in meetings.
It's timing. It's not about knowing
that
the offense.
Just like, that is a challenge. And so if he can't get back by week 15 or 16, then you're pushing it. Like, and you're risking his own health maybe for the future. And I'm assuming he wouldn't be back on the field if it's not that case. That it's not, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. If he can get back by week 15, I think he's almost immediately the second best wide receiver on the roster. I think he's better than Juju. And based on the rookie struggles that Xavier Worthy's had, unless that clicks over the next 3 weeks, he's the better version of him. Like, he's not, like, Xavier was not a bad player. I don't want to take it that way. I just think Hollywood Brown immediately upgrades the unit.
That's why we were excited about him when he signed. I mean, there was a reason for it. They signed him, and they had big plans for him for this season. That's why the injury was so devastating in Jacksonville during the preseason game. So he's going to play for this team this year. I think that's very evident. Anybody questioning whether or not he would be back at any point for this team this year, that shouldn't be a question anymore. It's still going to just be the exact timeline and how quickly can they ramp him up. But, like, he's playing for them in this 2024 season. That's happening.
I think so.
And that was even with the setback. If he didn't have that setback that he had, we might be talking about him coming back,
He was supposed to come back in
week 9.
He was supposed to come back in October.
Yeah, it was like week 9. He would have been ready. Week 8.
The reason why they found the injury is because they were getting ready to open his practice window, got one more check, saw that the bone had moved. He then had to have the surgery as a result of that. He was getting ready to come back in October.
Yeah, week 5. You're right. Week 4, week 5 was when everybody thought after training camp. There's the one doctor was on with the drive that said maybe he was going to go on the pup list. It would be week 8, but ultimately he wasn't. He was going to be ready week 4, week 5. That's true. And now here we know we're talking about week 15, 16, 17. Maybe.
Still being able to come back, though, is significant. Again, for like the Chiefs, it's so hard with the Chiefs. They're not a bad offense. That's not how I would describe them. I think they're frustrating to watch because you've seen what Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid offenses look like at their maximum. And you've watched other teams this year, right? You've watched the Lions offense and be like, ooh, shiny toy. The Chiefs are a better than 2/3 of the league offense, even at their worst. Even like right now, they're better than 2/3 of the league, 66, 70% of the league on offense. I just want to see them get back to the top 10, 15%. I don't need them to be the best offense in the league in order to three-peat. I just need a little more juice. And a little more juice is Pacheco and Hollywood Brown. A little more juice. That puts you in a position where you are back into the top 10. You still rely on your defense to win, and then you go on to do the things you want to do.
Part of this conversation earlier, we brought up yards after the catch, Yak. And, does he help them there? You know what? It probably surprised you. The Chiefs are still one of the top 6 teams or so in football in
that
yards after catch. So this is yards after catch per completion. The top team in the league, you're not surprised. Detroit, actually tied with Baltimore. That might surprise you, but
not as much with some of those guys are just really good.
Detroit, Baltimore average 7.1 yards after the catch per completion.
The Bills, maybe.
Bills are third, 6.6. Bucks, 6.4. Packers, 6.3. Then the Chiefs. The other offenses probably made a lot of sense. You're like, oh, yeah, the Bucs offense has been good. But the Chiefs, despite being like, 10th or 12th in offense or whatever they are now, points per game, something like that. I haven't checked this week. They're right there in the top 6.
Part of me thinks that since the Rashee Rice injury, though, they're like 15th. And somehow he exacerbated that through like 2 games of just utter dominance.
He was out by week 4, though, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he was.
The Chargers game.
But
so.
Remember the games he was having during that time.
He did have some significant.
Everything was like 10 catches where he'd catch it for 3 yards and run for 15. I don't know. Obviously, I'm not going to dig
by
into,
now, they played enough
maybe
football,
15th,
though.
Maybe 10th or 11th.
Yeah, because, that they had basically 3 games of Rice they've now played 10 football games. I find it hard to believe that that's still propping it up to that extent. I don't know. I mean, well, I don't have the exact breakdown week to week. That'd be interesting to look at. This is just a composite or a compilation, excuse me, of the entire season yards after the catch.
It does change the math, at least.
Cleveland, the worst team. Carolina, third worst, who the Chiefs play on.
It is amazing Sunday. How the Chiefs, for whatever reason, doesn't seem like they have the statistics that they do. Like, just watching them play, you're like, really?
They're the 10th best offense and, like, number three in the NFL and getting first downs and, like, number five in points per possession. All those things.
If you brought that up, like, if you were... Because obviously they have the sports talk debate shows nationally. If you were to say, because for all the people who are like, oh, they're not that good. If you were to bring them that statistic, they wouldn't know what to do with themselves. Because numbers do, in a way, never lie. They can
it just
at
looks
times.
Hard.
But numbers really never lie when it comes down to averages and stuff. And they wouldn't... People don't realize how productive the offense actually is. Because, like, to your point, Cody, everything stands out because at first they had really been struggling in the red zone. They were moving the ball like as good as anybody else was in the league. So that's where I think the yak comes into play and some of the other things like averages, maybe not necessarily points as much as what they're able to do between the 20s, I guess.
This is also why I think Pacheco's going to have a bigger impact. Because you're going to, like, the defense is already one of the five best defenses in the league. The offense needs a little juice. Pacheco is the energizer bunny, according to Patrick Mahomes himself. I just think having him back in there brings energy to your offense. And as nice of a job as Kareem Hunt has done, and I think that's kind of inarguable, Pacheco's better.
Well, sure.
He's a better back. They're a better offense with him.
I think they both need to be part of this, though, going forward.
You think like Thunder and Lightning, like a true Jameer Gibbs, 50, David Montgomery? 50, someone on the text line earlier mentioned
not
that.
Not 50-50, but early on, 65-35, then maybe it's 70-30 at some point later on in the season. But you want to, you know, you're still coming back from a serious injury for Pacheco. I hope he's the same player. I think he will be. And we saw Kareem Hunt can be effective in short yardage. I think there's something to be said for that. Isaiah Pacheco is definitely more capable of the explosive play, to your point. That's probably where they could have some more benefit, you know, on a screen pass or a pass to the flat. Pacheco's more likely to get a 5-yard pass into 15 or 20, whereas Kareem Hunt probably not getting much more after the catch. So I hear you. And that's where earlier we were discussing, what do they do roster-wise when Pacheco's available? Because can't P. Ryan's role be replaced by both Pacheco and Hunt? Do they need that veteran presence, really, once they're all healthy? What about Clyde? He hasn't played all year. We all know that's a sensitive subject, if you will, because of the backstory. But he hasn't played all year. And then Carson Steele, do you think you could actually get him through the practice squad?
I don't know.
So are they going to... Honestly, think about talking this all out. If you're impacting the human element too, P. Ryan should be the guy they end up just cutting.
Probably, yeah. Because I think Kareem Hunt can do largely what he does for this team. Absent the kick returns, I think you pointed out earlier.
So I think Kareem Hunt had the longest rush in 2 years for him.
Longest rush for him in 2 years of 18 yards. Pacheco's not like a 90-yard touchdown guy either, and I'm not claiming that. But to pretend like he doesn't have more explosiveness at this age versus what Kareem is really just kind of disingenuous. If Charles, here's the biggest swing though. If Charles Omenihu, after let's say 3 weeks, let's say he plays this week and then 2 weeks from down there, if 3 weeks from now, Charles Omenihu is 2023 Charles Omenihu, then we got something. Then, like, even if Pacheco is last year's Isaiah Pacheco, the offense is better, but not the difference in what Omenihu would make if he was last year's Charles Omenihu. Because a defensive line of with him and Karloftis on the outside, where Chris Jones can also go in the middle with Turk Wharton, that's when I think they can actually get pressure without sending the blitz. They're one of the worst sack teams in the league. They're not one of the worst pressure teams in the league, and you know that Jay Binkley values the pressure more than I do. I value sacks, actually getting to the quarterback. This year's a little bit different for me because I have so often seen the Chiefs eliminate successful plays for teams via just simply getting pressure on those downs. But last week's game was why it's a problem. Last week's game is a perfect example. They did a perfectly fine job getting some pressure on Josh Allen on third and long. What did Josh Allen do? Because they couldn't get to him. Beat him because he's a great quarterback. He beat him, even though they got pressure all the time, constantly, as a matter of fact, on third and long. That's why I need a Minshew back getting sacks.
Yeah, Minshew was winning one-on-one battles consistently last year. So the same thing applies to him. If he's able to be anywhere near what he was post-ACL injury, then they're getting a huge addition late in the season, ultimately for the postseason. I mean, about as big as you can get on the defensive side of the football in the NFL. If he's going to be that effective,
a good secondary.
That's why
pass
at the time
rusher?
It was such a big loss when he tore his ACL in the right before in the postseason or right before the postseason. I can't remember if it was the opening game of the postseason or whatever it was. That's why it was so devastating, because he was a problem consistently winning matchups, and it made life so much easier for Karlaftis. I know we think about it from the Chris Jones side of it. If a Minnehue's anywhere near what he was, Karlaftis to me is actually the biggest beneficiary of that. Not Chris Jones, it helps, but I think Karlaftis all of a sudden, if a Minnehue's back, I think you'll
see still going to double team Chris Jones.
I think you'll see Karlaftis' numbers bump up sack wise.
He, like, it's funny, he has developed as a pass rusher, but it's like he seemingly has capped himself a little bit. Like, he's still a really good pass rusher. It's not like he's a bad one. He's probably like what we just talked about, right? He's like the league average type. He's like, or a slightly above average pass rusher. He's got 4 sacks in 11 games. He'll get like 8 sacks this year. And you'll be like, yeah, okay, perfectly fine job. But they came in spurts, exactly how it happened last year. His problem is that he just kind of goes quiet for a little while. So he had a sack in 3 straight games against the 49ers, Raiders, and Bucks. None in the last 2 games. Not getting tackles on the outside. And had he maintained his edge protocol better, they might get the stop on 4th and 2. So, like, he's a good player. There's nothing wrong with having a George Karlaftis. It's nice. It's a really good player to have on your team. But he hasn't developed to another level separate from that one yet either.
Yeah, text line said the force. That's right. He got hurt on the force fumble against the Ravens last year. Many of you. That was the play.
God, that sucked. And that felt like, at the time, like a really big loss for them come the postseason, in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know. The Super Bowl.
They still found a way.
Still won
the
whole
thing.
That's
why it's like any of these stuff, it's like it's so hard to act like it's impossible to overcome anything that's happened this year, because we've seen them be able to do that consistently.
Exactly. That's where I'll be stuck all year. And I think we've had four straight guests say the exact same thing. If this were a different team, I would judge them and be more critical of them for a variety of their issues. But because the last 2 years, they've won the Super Bowl while we've tried to be actively critical of their clear issues, it hasn't mattered. I give them a different ranking.
Coming up next, we'll get to what's trending. And then earlier today, Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, joined us. We asked him about these injuries and also what he's seeing in the rest of the AFC. Did anything change after this past weekend? That's coming up.
What's trending?
What's trending here on Cody and Golds, presented by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu. Andy Reid earlier today spoke to the media, didn't give any clear timeline on the injury status for a couple players, just continuing to acknowledge that basically everybody is practicing that's expected to practice today. Pacheco and Minnehue are definitely in play for Sunday, but we're going to have to wait till Friday to find out ultimately what their status is. Also did acknowledge Hollywood Brown, that he's proud of his progress and all that, but doesn't have a time yet.
I think if they list him as a limited participant today, I put it like a 50-50 shot that they play on Sunday. But if they're a full participant, I'd be kind of surprised if they're not on the field against the Carolina Panthers. Next up for what's trending, according to Adam Schefter, Ray Lewis is a finalist for the Florida Atlantic coaching job, trying to follow the steps of that of Deion Sanders when he went to Jackson State. Charlie Weiss Jr. also apparently in the running for that job. But interesting that a team might do the same thing, right? Just take some former athlete who is a star name that young players might know, try to recruit that way and bring him down there. They just fired Tom Herman, who was apparently like floating his resumes to some assistant jobs at bigger universities. So can't blame him at least on that end, but at least they're considering Ray Lewis, that according to reports.
Motivator. He wants the job, but it sounds like the front runner is actually Charlie Weiss Jr. Yes, the son of Charlie Weiss, who is now the offensive coordinator with Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, who's had a lot of success.
They've had a good year.
Yeah, a lot of success there. Next up on what's trending college basketball locally, last night at Allen Fieldhouse, Kansas got the 84-66 win against UNC Wilmington. K-State was at home last night. They got a win against Mississippi Valley State, 74-56. It was a 2-point game at halftime, and then K-State was able to pull away comfortably.
I mean, at least they were able to pull away comfortably. That was a team that Missouri beat not that long ago.
Yeah, no 100-point wins last night in college basketball. That only happened a couple nights ago.
That's only for the ruse.
That's just for the ruse and cavalry.
Doesn't happen for other teams. College. But still, a couple of wins for the local schools as well. Next up on What's Trending, Eli Manning is amongst 25 semifinalists for the NFL Pro Football Hall of Fame. Obviously, some of the other names you're used to, who I'm kind of surprised aren't Hall of Famers yet, like Torrey Holt or Jared Allen, who, you know, I mean, if you look at some of his career stats, I would think at least be in the mix. Antonio Gates, a first time, is in there as well. James Harrison, a lot of the names you'd come to expect. They're at least the 25 list of players who will be considered to be in this year's NFL Hall of Fame.
And one injury note in the NFL to pass along today, the Eagles, who are playing some really good football suddenly, their defensive end, Bryce Huff, going to have wrist surgery, going to miss decent amount of time moving forward. He is out an undetermined recovery period due to that. 26-year-old, 19 sacks in his career. That's
not nothing.
What's trending. Yeah, no. I mean, it's he's a piece. Like he's a piece to that picture right now. That's looking pretty good for Philadelphia.
And for a Bucs team, that was the other NFL news. For a Bucs team that has stayed in the playoff hunt, I saw Mike Evans practicing today for them. So
I guess it's been go back to right before they played the Chiefs. So it's been a month, I guess, already.
That
almost.
Hamstring injury and that injury where they lost Godwin in the same game. Boy, what a brutal stretch for them. So the reporting earlier from Jordan Schultz is that he's planning to play against the Giants this weekend. So Mike Evans could be back in the league.
Okay. Keep an eye on that as Tommy DeVito and the Giants will take on Baker Mayfield and maybe Mike Evans and the Bucks on Sunday. That is what's trending here on Cody and Gold. Earlier today, we were joined, as always, by our Odyssey NFL insider. Every Wednesday, Ross Tucker stops by, and we, of course, got his perspective on did he change his view about the Chiefs after the Buffalo Bills loss at all? And we did start our conversation discussing where he was last night, which was a little maction.
Yeah, man, I'm a sicko, dude. Sunday I did Raiders, Dolphins. This Sunday I have Titans, Texans for CBS. But they asked if I wanted to do Maction last night. What am I going to say? No, of course I want to do Maction. So drove to Cleveland. And then last night I drove, I don't know, 4.5 hours back. Got home at like 3:30 in the morning. Yep. What? I don't mess around, boys.
One of our coworkers, we describe exactly this way. His name's Jay Binkley. And we used to describe it like in April, he'd probably be like scratching so bad. He'd be like looking for like back alley, you know, backyard football games. Needs football so bad. He's been searching for it even in the off season.
You know what's interesting? I love football. And during football season, I'll watch any like high school, college, NFL. I will call any game, but I do like having my weekends off and, you know, having that free time in the off season. Like, I don't get into the XFL, you know what I mean? Like, or UFL, or whatever it's called now. Like, I don't really watch that because those are the only weekends I can actually be with my family. I mean, this is, you know, again, I'll fly to Houston tomorrow, just so people know. I don't know if they know how it works, but I'll fly to Houston tomorrow afternoon. Friday morning, go to the Texans facility, watch them practice, meet with players and coaches. Saturday, go to the hotel to meet with the Titans. Sunday's the game. So, point being, I'm away from my family like every weekend. So, in the off season, you know, after the Super Bowl till August, like I am fully taking advantage of those weekends and not. As much as I love football, I'm not watching the UFL.
I totally get it. Now, watching the Chiefs and Bills, was it just reinforcing what we already knew some of the weaknesses were for the Chiefs, or was there something that maybe concerned you more?
I don't know. It's so crazy the way they were able to win it last year when nobody thought they were gonna. That if this was like any other team, we would talk about their offensive issues. We would talk about how even, you know, with Spags' defense, the Bills are able to put more points up, and you'd be concerned. And I think that's probably why nobody's ever won three in a row before. It's because not that the Chiefs are getting complacent in any way, but it's almost like we are. You know, it's like we should be saying they need to be better than this. They need to do this better. But my overarching takeaway from the game is just that to me, I feel like it makes it more likely the Chiefs will win when they play against each other in the playoffs. I think it's really hard for either one of them to beat the other one twice. And I think it's more significant that it could impact home field advantage than it is that, you know, the Chiefs lost the game.
I don't think that teams just, like, stash things forever or whatever, Ross. But, like, I watch the Chiefs all year, so I got a better viewpoint, I guess, from, like, other people typically. That was, in my opinion, a really vanilla version of their offense. Is that what you saw out of the Chiefs?
Hard to say. I feel like it's been vanilla in a lot of games this year. I feel like they've not been kind of what we thought they would be. And maybe some of that's Hollywood Brown and Rashee Rice and whatever. It's actually remarkable that they've done as much winning as they have without those guys. They clearly, I think, were trying to get the ball to Xavier Worthy early in the game, and it kind of worked until it didn't. I don't know. I do not think that they held stuff back for a rematch. I mean, maybe a little bit, but the way I describe it is, think about like a chessboard, right? You know, if you've ever like talked to anybody that plays high-level chess, they'll tell you if any one piece on the board is different, it kind of changes the whole thing. It changes your potential moves. It changes strategies. Like one piece, you know, being on or off the board, that's the way I feel like football is. So I think it would be somewhat silly to reserve things for, number one, a rematch that might not happen. And number two, you know, both teams are going to have different pieces on and off their board if they play against each other in January, right? Like the Bills will probably have Kincaid back and Keon Coleman, so that changes what Spags will do. You know, that goes both ways. So I think you can – I don't think it's smart to try to hold things for the next matchup when strategy and game planning is going to be a decent amount different based on who is and is not available on the chessboard for that next game.
Because we all agree it's not the Chiefs because they've got too much, like, long history of winning to do it. Who is the team in your mind that has way more wins than you think they should? Like, who is the fraudulent 7-win team or fraudulent 8-win team? Who in your mind is weaker than their actual record?
Probably the Steelers. Yeah. I mean, I think the Steelers are pretty good. I don't think they're 8-2 good. I have to go back and think about their games, but just thinking about the last few weeks, the win over the Ravens by 2 points, the win over the Commanders by 1 point. It kind of feels like the Steelers, for whatever reason, are winning more than their fair share of one-score games. And I'm not sure they're really, you know, they're really that good. You know, I think they're pretty good, but I don't think they're, oh, my gosh, 8-2. You know, it's funny because last week you guys were asking me about him, and so was the folks in Buffalo as, like, a real threat. I just can't – they're not winning 3 or 4 playoff games like that. You know, I just don't believe that. Maybe one, but I don't think 3 or 4.
We're talking to Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL insider here on 96.5 The Fan. Kind of on the same lines, but looking at maybe a team that is better than we all thought they would be and now maybe needs more attention – where do you stand with the Chargers right now after what they were able to do Sunday Night Football? Of course, they almost blew. Well, they did blow the lead, and they were able to salvage it against Cincinnati. And now this is an AFC West that could have, and if it ended this weekend, would have 3 playoff teams.
Yeah, that's kind of wild, isn't it? I would say that the Chargers, they got a shot because they've got a quarterback that can go toe-to-toe with, you know, they got a quarterback can go toe-to-toe with these other guys. Now, again, I don't know that Herbert can do that 3 or 4 games in a row. He hasn't really shown that. But certainly, I would not be surprised if the Chargers could beat a Ravens team or a Bills team or a Chiefs team in a playoff game. I'm not ready to think that they could do it three or four times in a row, but I do think that they can do it. I do think they can do it in a one-game situation. And I'm really looking forward to the Harbaugh Monday night.
Yeah.
But those are two teams that I think are good enough to do it. I think they're good enough to make a run at this thing. I mean, if you look at it, Chiefs, Bills, Steelers, I'm not sure I'm there on the Texans. I think that I'll feel differently about them maybe after I see them up close on Sunday and after they get Will Anderson back. But even with the Broncos and how they looked against the Falcons, right now, all seven of the projected playoff teams, the AFC guys, they feel like they're good enough where they could win a playoff game. A lot of times, like, the worst division winner and one of the wild cards at least, you're like, yeah, they're not winning the playoff game, right? Whereas, I don't know, I kind of feel like in the AFC, I could see, I don't think that, like, the Texans and the Broncos are on the Chiefs and Bills level, but I wouldn't be surprised if they won a playoff game.
When you look at what the bad teams in the league are doing, I always kind of like your perspective. What would you do if you're the Cowboys? Just tear down, try to trade Dak? What would you do, Ross?
Well, I mean, that's a longer conversation. The first thing I would do is stop having the octogenarian owner talking to the media. It would probably be number one. Number two, I'd probably hire and empower a real GM, and I would change my entire strategy as it comes to contracts. And then I would not tear it all down. I think that they have some really, I mean, a lot of teams, at least 20 off the top of my head, would take a starting place of Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, and Micah Parsons. To have three elite players at three, arguably the three most important positions, I don't think that's a full tear down.
Okay. I mean, look, I think the Jets is. I just didn't know what you do with the Cowboys. Jets you tear down, right? We at least agree there?
1,000%, yeah. I mean, and that's another one where, I mean, with all these reports coming out, ownership is a problem for the Jets, has been a problem for the Jets, and sounds like it'll continue to be a problem, although it seemed like it maybe was a little bit better when Woody Johnson was like an ambassador right. or whatever he was. Yeah, so. Yeah. Maybe, I mean, think about that where we're at. Like, Jets fans are like praying that their owner gets an ambassadorship overseas so that it can help their football. Like, what a time to be alive.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, Ross, appreciate it, man. Safe travels this week.
All right, thanks, guys. See ya.
So that was Ross Tucker a little bit earlier on today.
Tangent's coming in here just now finding out about something we own.
We worked on something. Back around the Cody and Gold garage sale. And if you're on video stream, you can see the artist that has been responsible for multiple paintings for our garage sale that have gone for a lot of money said he wanted to do one for Carrington.
You're digging through our office? We had long-term plans for this.
You went into our Cody and Gold garage sale, and the surprise item that's going to be up for bid, unless Carrington's going to have to bid on his own thing, is a Carrington painting, and did it's fantastic.
It's really good.
It's a really good painting of Carrington.
It's really, really good. I'm kind of jealous. It's got MU colors on it too. I kind of want a Chiefs or a KU version of that. It's very good. But Rob spoiled
it. Who broke into our office?
Somebody went into our garage sale closet full of stuff to give Carrington this painting.
Was Parks looking for singles or something?
Scott was looking. Am I on right now?
You're on.
Yeah, you're on.
I didn't remember my headphones in here. Sorry. Scott was looking for a different photo that has disappeared out of the newsroom. So
he went in our closet?
There is apparently drama.
That was turned around backwards for a reason.
There was drama in the newsroom about a missing photo. Scott was searching for said missing photo. And then
he thought the photo was in the art.
He just was checking doors and found the Carrington photo and then showed it to Carrington.
Now Carrington's carrying it around and hanging it up everywhere.
Dana and Parks were walking around the newsroom.
Damn, we were
going to
do something so fun with that. I'm so bummed.
It's over.
They were moving all over the newsroom. I'm like, who are you guys looking for? Like, a photo. And then Scott came out with that and he goes, I got this. It's better. And
yeah,
I'm like,
we, It was.
I'm like, I don't know what that is, but it is better.
We've been stashing it, waiting for the right moment to just like hang it in a Red Lobster in this city.
Yeah, we were gonna try to.
And now it's just out in the open. Now everyone knows it exists.
We wanted to like have it at like a KU bar, just hanging up or something.
It would have been great to take to Lawrence for a KU game. Just put it up in Jefferson's or something.
Yep. Damn. Well. It'll be up for auction. Carrington can bid on his own piece of art.
He can bid on a painting of himself.
He can't just take it. Right now, $500.
It's not a small painting, I would remind you. It's like 24 by... I mean, it's a good-sized painting.
Hey, if he donates $500 to next year's garage sale, right now he can take it home right this second. Otherwise, he's going to have to wait.
He's going to have to make a donation directly.
Right now, $500.
Hung as we speak.
Hung where?
In the newsroom.
Well, no, it's ours.
It's for our sale.
This is a 154.
This is theft.
This can't be hanging up. This
it might be grand theft. His paintings usually go for $1,000. What's the felony rate before?
This might be felony theft. In a shared newsroom?
No, but it's not even joking. It can't be on display. It has to be back in our garage sale spot. we will be auctioning this painting. We're not even kidding.
$1,500 or more.
I'm behind a post. Is it being hung?
David Alston does
great
work.
Hanging up in the KMBZ area.
David Alston does great work. He's done a lot of the like player paintings for us for the Coding Gold
Garage. He's very, very talented, as you guys can see.
He's a local artist, in case you ever need
somebody.
I don't
know where you guys got that photo, but it is a good painting.
Mm-hmm. Dude,
the likeness is very good.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's an excellent likeness of Carrington Harrison.
It's very well done.
And a huge painting.
It definitely confused everyone in the newsroom as to why it was existing in your guys' office, but that was...
I'm just trying to save it for something cool. We didn't know what. We were just like, we didn't want to.
Someone said you guys already
blow it on something
have
small.
Stuff disappearing in the garage sale. Sounds like you guys need a better storage situation. We actually do. It's in a door. It's behind a closed door in an office. And we have cameras that are actually in the area, not from us, but we just happen to have cameras.
If something had gone missing, we would have known. Mm-hmm. So.
Somebody suggesting that you guys should do a photo like the Step Brothers poster.
A painting of Cody and I, Step Brothers. Who's buying that? Where are you putting that?
I don't know.
Where are you putting that?
I hope in some frat house at some, that's a great frat house painting.
UMKC.
Yeah, but they don't have fraternities, really.
Yeah, there's not much of that.
Mm. Well, then put it in Lawrence, then. Hey,
Greek life. Doesn't exist much there.
Wow. We were going to talk about
Parks. Parks is just breaking into offices now?
I guess so. You wanted to find something? Damn. So he gives them the right to open any door.
I looked up felony theft is $1,500. I looked up the cost of his paintings typically around that range. He has committed felony theft. I just want to let it be known. Parks has committed felony theft.
Yeah, we'll have to break the news to Carrington the painting cannot leave the building until someone
bids on it.
That
cannot just go to
it.
Your house. Yeah. That is property of Cody and Alex.
We're trying to raise money for the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum next garage sale. We'll be doing it. It'll be what? The fifth annual.
Do you think he actually wants the picture to hang up in his own place?
Well, I don't know. It's very nice. Yes. Anyway.
It is very nice.
We're back at it tomorrow here on Cody and Gold. We didn't get a chance to talk about some of the Jets drama. Maybe we'll hit on that again tomorrow. But Danen Hughes, Paul Charchi, and Fantasy Football, all 32, and a Snitch Line Thursday coming your way tomorrow.